You're on the Plants Grow Here podcast. I'm Daniel Fuller. Come along with me as we enter a hidden world of deep horticultural, ecological, and landscape gardening knowledge with featured experts, industry professionals, and enthusiasts.
The ideals of permaculture are alive and well amongst gardeners and horticulturists who grow fruit and veggies. But what about those of us focusing on amenity and ornamental gardens, including domestic gardens and public parks? The term permaculture is a combination of the words permanent and agriculture, relating to sustainability and an understanding of nature's systems and rhythms. There's no surprise that most permaculturists are focusing on growing food. But that doesn't mean that we can't use the same principles when we're creating gardens for leisure and beauty. In this episode, I'm going to revisit each of the 12 principles of permaculture and explore some of the ways that they can be applied to gardens where growing food isn't a priority. Each of these principles blends into the others, and so the examples I provide will often apply to multiple principles. The 12 principles that we'll be discussing in this episode are observe and interact, catch and store energy, obtain a yield, apply self-regulation and accept feedback, use and value renewable resources and services, produce no waste, design from patterns to details, integrate rather than segregate, use small and slow solutions, use and value diversity, use edges and value the marginal, and creatively use and respond to change. Let's start with the first principle, observe and interact. This principle emphasizes the importance of observing nature closely before making interventions in a system. By observing the patterns and interactions present, we can design more effective and sustainable solutions. Have a walk around your garden and have a look at the way the light moves. Look at the way water moves through the garden. Are there any particularly troublesome spots or plants that aren't really working in the space they're in? Notice how different plants and elements thrive in specific conditions while others struggle. Observe the wildlife behaviour and which organisms are present, as well as their role within the ecosystem. Interact with the garden regularly to understand its needs, whether that's having a walk around and pulling out a few weeds here and there, or making a habit of hand watering each plant. Engage with the garden community as well. Are there any people locally in your area that have a pretty good idea of the growing condition? Or maybe there are professional industry associations that you can become a part of and gain insights from there. The second principle that we'll be talking about is catch and store energy. In permaculture, capturing and storing natural energy sources such as sunlight, water, seeds, and food is a core principle. So when we talk about catching and storing energy, there are two parts here. The first is the catching of the energy, so that would be like a solar panel, and then the storing of the energy would be the battery, where we can store that energy for later usage. So again, that could be well-designed roofs that control the water runoff, and then that would be a water tank to store it. But it goes beyond just that surface level as well. So if you've got sunlight glowing down on bare patches of soil, it's kind of just being reflected back out and not really being used. Whereas if you put a plant there, that plant can actually store that energy and then create food or create flowers or create colourful leaves that we really enjoy. Rainwater harvesting systems are really important, so we can use them for irrigation. There's that rainwater tank again. Or even just incorporating rainwater gardens and bioswales to help capture that water in the groundwater table instead of allowing it to roll off into stormwater drains and then be wasted. Mulch is another way that we can retain that moisture in the soil. The third principle is to obtain a yield. This principle focuses on ensuring that our systems provide a yield or a benefit in return for the effort that we put into them. A yield is most commonly associated with food, but it can be any benefit, including aesthetic beauty. Some plants attract beneficial insects, and that's a yield. Other plants can remediate sodicity in the soil or prevent erosion. Again, that's a yield. So we can harvest seeds from spent flowers to propagate new plants, and we can collect fallen leaves for composting, or we can leave them on the ground as mulch. You can incorporate fruit-bearing trees or shrubs that can give us both beauty, particularly like something like an apple tree where they have beautiful foliage in the autumn and then in the spring they have beautiful flowers, And then eventually those flowers will ripen into a fruit, which is another yield. So you're getting multiple yields off a single plant in that case. We can capture rainwater, that's another yield. And also garden waste being turned into compost. The fourth principle is to apply self-regulation and accept feedback. So self-regulation involves monitoring your systems and making adjustments to maintain that efficiency. Accepting feedback from the environment could be having a look at your plants and understanding that, okay, they have yellow leaves and they're a bit droopy. Perhaps I've been overwatering them. It could also involve feedback from clients, stakeholders, your boss if you have one, and even just passers-by who may give you some advice. It's up to you whether or not you want to take on that advice, but I would say remove your ego and have a look at the actual conditions of the garden and really ask yourself whether the feedback that you're receiving actually resonates. So part of this principle as well is monitoring plant health and adjusting your care practices accordingly. What are your plants trying to tell you? Are they yellowing off again, like I said, because there's too much water? Are they wilting or crisping off? On the other hand, especially during dry, hot periods, how can you remedy these problems efficiently and sustainably? Natural processes usually regulate pest populations and other health problems as long as you have that healthy ecosystem going and you have all the right plants in the right places. If you're consistently trying to help a sick plant, sometimes it's better off ripping it out and putting something else in, unless you can actually uncover a core problem such as maybe it's been planted too deeply and you can just remove some of that soil around the base. As part of that self-regulation as well, you need to have a look at stuff like rainfall patterns and see if you need to adjust your irrigation. Or maybe you look at the soil and you realize, hang on, this soil is a little bit light in color. Maybe I need to add some more organic matter into it. That's also accepting that feedback that the garden is trying to give you. The fifth principle is to use and value renewable resources and services. Valuing renewable resources is a mindset shift. Instead of treating materials as disposable, we should zoom out and take a long-term view. The more sustainable materials and practices are, the more easily they can be preserved and replenished over time. Why buy something if you can make it? Or use recycled materials that your garden abundantly produces? Compost created on-site is much more affordable and sustainable than trucking in imports and then shipping out garden waste. Fallen logs and cut branches can form garden edging and habitat. Are there any other materials unique to your site that can be recycled? Dense, biodiverse plant communities can enhance soil fertility. And you can support wildlife by providing natural habitat and food sources, such as dense planting, shrubbery, tall trees, pollen, nectar, fruits, and seeds. All of these are renewable resources and services that we have at our fingertips. The sixth principle is to produce no waste. The aim here is to minimize waste by reducing, reusing, and composting materials within the system. By closing the loop on waste production, resources are conserved, and the environmental impact and financial expenditure is reduced. Of course, it's impossible to produce absolutely zero waste, but if we're mindful, we can approach zero waste. Implementing a compost system for kitchen scraps and garden trimmings is an obvious way to reduce waste, as is repurposing old containers for creative garden projects. Instead of buying a new bucket to brew compost tea, what containers are already in the shed? Maybe they just need a triple rinse out and then they're good to go. Avoid single-use materials, including plastics. Upcycle fallen branches into natural fencing, borders, or plant supports. You can also minimize water waste through efficient irrigation practices, whether that's through drip irrigation, a smart irrigation system, which we'll talk about shortly, or maybe even just hand watering your plants, which is an excellent opportunity to observe and interact with your garden. The seventh principle is called design from patterns to details. So here, designing from patterns involves understanding the broader patterns present in nature and then using them as a guide for your own design, construction, and maintenance decisions. Because even though this principle is about design, design is actually an ongoing thing within a permaculture garden, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. You can understand the natural patterns by observing and interacting with a garden, but a bit of horticulture theory goes a long way here. An understanding of taxonomy, soil science, biology, integrated pest management, pruning, climate, and so forth can all help you see through the matrix, while other people just see a bunch of green stuff. Plan garden layouts based on natural patterns like sunlight exposure and water flow. Create focal points using textures, colours, and shapes. Incorporate repeating motifs or themes throughout the garden design, and pay attention to different transitions between different garden areas, which is related to valuing the marginal, which we'll discuss shortly. The eighth principle is to integrate rather than segregate. Integration involves combining different elements within a system to create mutually beneficial relationships. Rather than isolating components, this principle encourages their interconnection for increased resilience and efficiency. So you can mix biodiverse ornamental and edible plants to create a diverse and functional garden, and this can help to confuse pests and encourage beneficial insects. You can also combine different plant heights and textures for visual interest, or include seeding areas within garden beds rather than separating people from nature. You can integrate pathways that lead visitors through various garden sections, and by taking that integration mindset, we can really help immerse people in nature. Maybe we have some pendulous leaves that caress the face as you walk through, and that's a really beautiful sensory element and a way to integrate people into nature. You can also connect garden elements like compost bins or rainwater barrels to the overall design, and that helps with convenience. Maybe it's an easier pathway to walk. Or you can also incorporate these as part of the design. So rather than hiding the compost bin, it can become something that you celebrate and you can actually make it look nice. The ninth principle is to use small and slow solutions. This principle advocates for starting with manageable actions and allowing gradual changes to evolve naturally. This approach fosters long-term sustainability and minimizes disruptions to the ecosystem. We've all been guilty of impatience in the garden, and it usually bites us on the butt. Earlier this year, I tried to amend heavy clay way too quickly and used too much gypsum. As a result, I suspect that nutrients were leached from the topsoil, and I lost a couple of plants shortly after. If I'd just been more patient and used a light hand while trusting natural systems, I might have saved those plants. It's a good idea to start with small garden projects and then gradually expand based on your successes. You should allow plants to grow at their natural pace without excessive pruning or fertilizing. And also just implementing gradual changes in garden layouts and observing the long-term effects is usually a lot better than trying to rush through things in the garden. Rather than just calendar spraying herbicides and pesticides every couple of months, you can opt for physical weed removal methods and prevention, or also just an integrated pest management program where we just take a much slower and a zoomed out view of trying to maintain and control these unwanted volunteers in the garden. The 10th principle is to use and value diversity. Diversity is key to resilience and productivity in permaculture systems, even ornamental ones. By incorporating a wide range of plants, animals, materials and other elements, the system can better adapt to changing conditions and thrive in the long term. Include more plant species from different plant families and genera so that we can create more varied resources for the ecology. These biodiverse plants can have different bloom times for year-round interest and pollinator support, and they can also have a variety of different growth habits which can give different habitat options to different types of fauna. And they can also have different kinds of berries and seeds that birds, insects, and other organisms can feed on. If your garden design is for the public, do your best to make it accessible for people with different needs and abilities. That might be providing some signage or ramp access to people who can't use stairs. The 11th principle is to use edges and value the marginal. This principle highlights the importance of the edges where different ecosystems meet. So that could be maybe the area between a shady microclimate and a sunny microclimate, or it might be along a riverbank where the conditions rapidly change. So those areas can be really important for both biodiversity and even productivity, particularly in food production. So a very obvious example of this is to use edge planting. So installing plants along boundaries between different garden areas, or maybe along pathways, fence lines, borders, and between different microclimates or garden beds. You can also create transition zones. So between one area to another, you can actually really focus on that and then maybe make that area a bit special, whether that becomes a seating area or whether that just becomes a pathway, or whether you just want to grow interesting plants in that space, or maybe even a bird bath. Hardscaping can really help here. So natural materials like rocks, logs, even tiles in pathways or along pathways can provide habitat for small creatures like reptiles, amphibians, butterflies, birds, and so forth. Some people prefer the natural shape of plants, but hedge pruning larger shrubs or trees along fence lines and pathways can allow larger plants to be present without taking up too much space. And these can be really great for habitat and windbreaks. The edges can also be a really great spot for seating, because if we have the fence line to our back, then we have a great view of basically the whole garden. The 12th and final principle is to creatively use and respond to change. So using change is a really interesting mindset shift here, because I think in gardens, a lot of the time when we experience change, it feels like an end. It feels like a disruption. But in permaculture, we actually want to embrace that change and creatively use change as a resource. So be open to creative solutions and be responsive to those changing conditions to allow for continuous improvement and innovation within the system. So what does that actually mean? So let's consider the changing of seasons, which is just a very small change within the garden and a regular one that we should all be expecting. How will the garden look throughout spring, summer, autumn, winter, and then back into spring again? Do you want to incorporate annuals, which are a lot of work, which do present a fantastic yield and colourful result? Or would you rather focus on perennials, which may or may not be as spectacular, but certainly are lower maintenance and you won't have to keep planting every year? Each season has different garden tasks associated with it as well. So generally spring and summer are the seasons most plants grow the most. You'll probably feed plants in early spring and maybe again in autumn. You'll irrigate them right through from spring until autumn or even into winter, but you might want to just hold off on that water through winter because a lot of plants aren't really uptaking that much water and evaporation can be limited as well. A more destructive change might be the presence of a new pest in your garden. Maybe you get some grasshoppers that come in and decimate a certain kind of a plant. Well, that's actually a really good opportunity to get some new predators in. Just maybe leave them alone for a little while and see what comes in. In my own garden, I've seen skinks come in to feed on grasshoppers, and that was a really exciting thing that happened in my garden, and they actually helped to control other pests and not just grasshoppers. Maybe another alternative option could be to just replace those plants that they've picked off and start celebrating a new kind of plant. So in that way, change doesn't have to be something negative. Even destruction can actually yield positive results. You can also design gardens with pot plants that are easily movable. Maybe throughout winter you want to protect some plants from frost, or maybe you just simply like to move plants and swap them around based on what's flowering at the moment, or even just your mood for today. Irrigation systems with adjustable emitters can help respond to changing amounts of rainfall. And smart irrigation systems can even have an app on your phone and can automatically respond to those rainfall predictions, which will save you a lot of time and effort, but can remove you from the garden a little bit. I think in permaculture, we really want to get out into the garden a lot, and hand watering can be a way that we can do that. It's sort of like an excuse to get out into the garden. Interactive garden elements like wind chimes and kinetic sculptures can respond to environmental changes like the presence or lack of presence of wind, and that can just be a nice little sensory element in the garden. So there we have it. That's the 12 principles and how we can use them in not just food production, but also ornamental and amenity gardens. Don't get confused. These are design, construction, and maintenance principles, but because a garden is never finished, you'll constantly be redesigning and reconstructing a permaculture garden over the years as plants mature, the ecology develops, and soil health improves. Your goals might change as well. Perhaps you start out with a focus on amenity and aesthetics, but don't be surprised if you start thinking about food production. It's only natural to obtain a yield once you take on a permaculture mindset. This episode was full of technical information, but it was also pretty short. Scroll through the back catalogue of episodes to see some other topics that might tickle your fancy, including a few permaculture-related highlights. including episode 196, Permaculture Syntropics, episode 134, Permaculture Edible Forest, episode 107, Companion Planting Veg by Family, episode 70, Enhance Your Urban Yield, and episode 31, Permaculture's 12 Principles, which is the first permaculture episode we did on this podcast.